In a desperate move to regain subscribers, Netflix turns to the video game industry as their last hope of survival.
What's going on, everyone? Jeremy here from The Quartering. I hope you're having a wonderful day. If you are, and you're feeling generous, please consider clicking that red subscribe button down below the video. It's really the only way that you'll be able to find my videos, as YouTube buries them deep in the search results, and I would just greatly appreciate it. Yesterday I covered a shocking slow in the growth for Netflix subscribers. Now, we all know that Netflix pulled ahead when half of this country, two-thirds of this country, were forced to sit at home. Many didn't have much to do, so they decided to sign up for streaming services. I would argue that, you know, a more tinfoil-y hat person would say that the launch of Disney Plus and the global lockdowns timing was extraordinarily fortuitous. But that's for a different video on a different platform. But Netflix itself has been watering down content for about 10 years now. They knew that they would have to rely on creating their own content, which was smart because they have new competitors like HBO Max, obviously Hulu, which is owned by Disney, Disney Plus, Paramount, Peacock. Everybody's taking their content back. So, for example, two of the most popular shows on Netflix for a very long time, The Office, The Simpsons, both removed. Actually, I think The Simpsons was on, it was on Netflix. Is that or Hulu? But Hulu's owned by Disney and they took it off. Either way, the devastating effects of just losing millions of people a day's reruns, background noise, like shows like Friends or The Office, that was what a lot of people were like exclusively using Netflix for. Now, in a report, Netflix is down nearly 500,000 subscribers in North America this quarter, leading to a stock to drop 5% on Wednesday, the company's biggest slide since its poor earnings report in last April. This marks the first time the platform ever has lost domestic customers in 2 years. The Financial Times ran the headline, Netflix bleeds subscribers, says streaming platform's failure to meet analyst projections has investors jumpy. The California-based company predicted it would add 3.5 million subscribers in the third quarter, disappointing investors who were looking for a stronger rebound in the second half of the year. The outlet reported adding, analysts had forecasted that Netflix would add 5.9 million subscribers during the third quarter. In a shareholder letter, Netflix executives blamed their failure to meet the projections in the quarter on unusual choppiness in our growth and cited the lockdown, something CFO Spencer Neumann echoed on the earnings call. But CEO Reed Hastings had to assuage similar worries after disappointing numbers the previous April. At the time, too, the company claimed the COOF was hurting business, with Hastings saying, we had those 10 years that we were smooth as silk, and now we're just a little wobbly. Well, I don't understand the logic behind blaming, having unprecedented numbers of people stuck in the house as a reason to not grow. Economically, were people cutting Netflix because they could no longer afford it? I mean, that's maybe an argument you could make. But I would argue that people are pretty attached to their television, like on the whole, just like Preparation H. And I'm not sure that there's a financial reason for cutting it. It was a quality reason. Netflix became worth significantly less when people's favorite shows were migrating to Disney Plus or to HBO Max. People were loving HBO Max's real-time release of Warner Brothers movies, where you could watch this brand new movie instead of paying an extra $30 like these idiots at Disney Plus charge. However, some aren't buying the COOF line, however, and blame other factors on Netflix's poor performance. Conservative radio host and commentator Todd Starnes believes pushing a woke agenda and filling original series and movies with hard R-rated material could be driving viewers away. They've gone woke. And Starnes said in an op-ed, pointing out the deal the company struck with Barack and Michelle Obama to create politically themed films and series, which he classified as propaganda disguised as entertainment. The former Fox News host also referenced the scandal over the movie with the kids, the dancers, which showed, well, I don't want to talk about it. Stearns argued it highlighted for families that Netflix isn't producing content they want to welcome into their homes. And this is actually a very interesting conversation piece because, yeah, there are still a lot of, like, there are a lot of single people. There are a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, early 40s without kids that have Netflix and they watch some of the spicy stuff that's on there. But when families have to make a decision and you have a parent and you have two young kids, Netflix doesn't really have a lot for the kids. That's Disney Plus. And so why not get rid of it? You see here, Netflix is basically becoming a soft core channel, he said, adding families just aren't going to spend money on that sort of garbage. They long for the days of Everybody Loves Raymond and then the Andy Griffith Show. I actually don't disagree with that. Everybody Loves Raymond was just a genius show. It still holds up. You know, Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond. These are shows that, you know, they had some spicy moments, but they were rare. They were the type of shows you could put on and leave on, not worry about, you know, somebody seeing something they shouldn't. Some tech insiders like analysts at Recode are skeptical, though, figuring out how to make games is, I'm sorry, in the midst of the Wall Street worries, the streaming giant is looking to gaming as a future saving grace. I think this is more of a desperation move than an innovative move. That's just my opinion. The company confirmed this week that it plans to get into video games during its earnings calls. I feel like a lot of people say this, like, we're going to get into video games and that's going to fix everything. Some tech insiders, like analysts at Recode, are skeptical. Figuring out how to make games is a very different skill than making TV shows, and they're not even good at that, which is why most big entertainment companies have failed, whether they've tried to get into the games themselves, the outlet reported, if they have. Big tech companies like Amazon, Apple, and Google have all swung and missed to varying degrees, so it's entirely possible that Netflix's move into games will flop too. Of course it will flop. I mean, look, I think Amazon's New World, it's probably the closest thing. You know, you could argue, we could talk about like Stadia, for example, but Stadia isn't a video game. It's more of like a platform. And then you have, you know, Microsoft themselves have, you know, the studios that they've purchased. I think they've done good making games and having a platform with their Xbox Studio and obviously their Game Pass. But I mean, Netflix has no history in it, but what Netflix does have is a super huge mega war chest. Could they go out there and buy some development, some small developers, and get some games going? Sure. But what kind of games would they even want to include? I mean, in a world where so many of us have massive back catalogs, I don't think I want more video games. I've got to be honest with you. I don't want more. I want better. You know, I want New World to be in development for another 3 years and come out and be something truly amazing. I wanted World of Warcraft to continue to get better. You know, the only game that I think continues to get better that I enjoy playing, and this is just saying from my current library, is like Final Fantasy. Everything else I've played recently has been a colossal disappointment. Netflix revealed in its initial efforts in gaming will be focused on mobile games. Of course it will. Why wouldn't they start with mobile games? The most cash hungry space of the game, you know, of the gaming world. Why wouldn't you be there? And will be included with users' Netflix subscriptions. Yeah, microtransactions need not apply, I'm sure. The company announced as part of the second quarter earnings on Tuesday. The news comes just days after the company said it hired former EA and Oculus executive Mike Verdu to head up the gaming work. Here's exactly what they said from the letter to investors. I don't really care. I'll see it. We view gaming as another content category for us, similar to our expansion to original films, animation, and unscripted TV. Games will be included in the members' Netflix subscription at no additional cost, similar to films and series. Initially, we'll be primarily focused on mobile devices. We're excited as ever about our movies and TV series offering when we expect a long runway of increasing investment and growth. I mean, could you do this in a good way? Yeah, maybe. you could have video games around, like, you know, if you had like a Stranger Things mobile game, like an augmented reality Stranger Things mobile game, and you did it right, I bet you people would play that. Black Mirror, you know, the Bandersnatch one. Yeah, I mean, that's another one. I actually really liked that. You know, a lot of people I talked to didn't like it. I really did. I don't know. I think this reeks of desperation. I don't think that getting into my video games is just a cure-all, the cure-all that they're hoping it will be. And you can see that their stock is down almost 6% in the last 5 days, and it's not getting any better. I don't think their investors are necessarily convinced either, but yeah, I'm not gonna shed a tear. I hate Netflix. Their content is garbage, and they ruin everything they buy with their Netflix adaptations. So I won't hate to see them continue to collapse.
Chapter 2. Activision Blizzard sued by the state of California. Shocking details have emerged.
Yikes. There's actually two separate stories. The first, the suit against Blizzard is, whew, spicy. We're going to talk about that in this video. And there's also another very, very bad story out about Blizzard, which I'm going to cover in my 3 o'clock video probably. So if you haven't yet, please do click that red subscribe button down below the video. If you're new here, I cover video game news, pop culture news, movies, music, technology, YouTuber stuff, 5 to 6 videos a day. I hope that I will earn your subscription. There's a little button. Just click it. Just click it. Click it. Thank you. Now, there is a spicy, spicy suit out, and we're going to get into some of the details here. First, we'll talk about Asmongold's response to it. Actually, no, let's talk about the suit itself because there is some spicy stuff in here. So, Activision Blizzard sued by the state of California over a pervasive frat boy culture. Some of the stories in here are just brutal. And okay, so let's get into it. The suit filed against California Department of Fair Employment and Housing comes after a 2-year investigation into the gaming giants. DFEH's report into Activision Blizzard claimed that working for the company was akin to working in a frat house, which invariably involved male employees drinking and subjecting female employees to bad behavior with no repercussion. In the office, women are subjected to cube crawls, in which male employees drink copious amounts of alcohol as they crawl their way through various cubicles in the office and often engage in bad behavior towards female employees. Male employees proudly come into work hungover, who cares about that, play video games for too long, no such thing, or for long periods of time during work, while it might be part of their job, while delegating responsibilities to female employees, engage in banter about hooking up and openly talk about female bodies and make spicy jokes. By the way, none of this surprises me. You're talking about relatively young people, who work long hours and who really probably live by the work hard, play hard mentality. And now, when I do this video, I know I'm going to get a bunch of my friends at Blizzard reaching out to me. You may not think of it, but you know, I've had independent conversations with probably more than 100 Blizzard employees over the years. And I hope I hear from some of you all about this too, because there's always two sides to every story. And of course, we're only getting the spiciest one. One example outlined how a woman decided to self-delete on a work trip after her male supervisor brought plugs, rear plugs, corks, we'll say, and other stuff with him. Now, that seems like there should be a lot more to that story. At a holiday party before her passing, male coworkers were passing around pictures of her junk. Now, I don't know how they got those pictures, you know, but again, yikes. I mean, that is just shameful stuff. Really, really bad. The suit also names former senior creative director of World of Warcraft, Alex Afrasiabi. The legal document claims that he was permitted to engage in blatant bad behavior with women with little to no repercussions. He was also known to engage in doing this to females that his suite would nicknamed the The Bill Suite, I'll say, the suit said, women make up about 20% of Activision's workforce, according to the report, but face challenges in breaking into the company's hierarchy. Activision Blizzard's double-digit percentage growth, 10-figure annual revenues, and recent diversity marketing campaigns have unfortunately changed little. Of course, they never change anything. I talked about this with Ubisoft. Of course, they change nothing. Very few women ever reach top roles at the company. The women who do reach higher roles earn less salary, incentive pay, and total compensation than their male peers. That's a quote. They have to prove that, which they're going to have to do in court. The suit cited several instances of women being denied promotions over male counterparts despite having more credentials, experience, and time in their role. Again, you're going to have to prove that. It also outlined examples of women being offered lower base pay and less stock rewards for their work. Male employees were also cited as having delegated tasks to women so that they could instead play games on the job. Women of color were disproportionately affected. Activision Blizzard had released a statement since the suit was filed claiming that the report included distorted and in many cases false descriptions of Blizzard's past. Well, it's certainly possible. You know, if you ever go and look at, for example, Glassdoor is a website where employees can review a company. Well, who reviews stuff? It's usually people that are really mad. And so, you know, I would look at Glassdoor reviews and you're just getting kind of like the worst of the worst experiences. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not true, but it is not exactly a cross section of employees, I'm sure. Over the past several years and continuing since the initial investigation started, we made significant changes to address company culture and reflect more diversity within our leadership teams. The Activision Blizzard lawsuit is similar to claims filed by other gaming giants, Riot and Ubisoft. The makers of League of Legends originally agreed on a $10 million settlement to as many as 1,000 employees after a class action lawsuit in 2018. It was alleged that Riot had facilitated bro culture that led to bad behavior and treatment of women in the workplace. Look, I won't go too long with this anecdote, but I worked for a company like this. And when I say that, I mean, I worked for an internet marketing incubator. That was my last real full-time job. What is an internet marketing incubator? Well, you have a CEO who's super rich. In our case, we had a cash cow company that was making about $30 million a year at its peak. And when you make that much money, you can start a lot of passion projects. In fact, one of my YouTube channels, RC Nightmare, the remote control car one, was built with money from that business as a fun side project. And it was one of the coolest jobs ever. You know, basically being able to spend our CEO's money on whatever weird side projects we wanted. Some things worked great, some things didn't work great. But everybody that worked there, the overwhelming majority of people that worked there, worked hard, made between $60,000 and $100,000, and was between the ages of 24 and 30. We would all work together all day, then we would leave work, and we would go party all night, and then everyone would get back into work the next morning, hungover and groggy, and someone would make a breakfast burrito run, and then by noon, everyone would be back at it. We'd work till 8, 9 o'clock at night, then we'd go back out to the bar, and this was the mentality. Everybody was hooking up with everybody. The young, good-looking guys, good-looking girls, partying, working hard. You build that bond in work, and it was toxic. Now that I look back at it, many marriages did not survive it, including the vice president of the company. But that's neither here nor there. So I've been a part of cultures like this, and when you're in it, you don't really notice it. You're just kind of like, oh, this is what we do. Everyone goes out and gets hammered, and you know, we party, and then you know, we go out for liquid lunches, and we go get like, you know, and this is what we do. And everyone is making a ton of money. I think I was 20. I think I was like 25. I was making about 200 grand a year at that age, and it was more money than, I mean, it might as well have been a million a year. I had no idea how to spend it. You know, I bought a house, I bought a truck, and then I like, you know, spent a lot of money on going out, eating out, going out, partying. And that's the same of all my coworkers. They were all in their 20s. And, you know, when you're 25 making 75 grand a year, plus you're getting bonuses of like 10 grand a quarter, you know, Everyone, you know, it's crazy. And I imagine that's what this is like, but when you have thousands of employees instead of, you know, 50. Now, Asmongold weighs in. Twitch sensation Asmongold, known for his complex relationship with the World of Warcraft developers, Activision Blizzard, has spoken out regarding the ongoing suit. In a tweet, he says, "Shameful to hear about what's been reportedly going on at Blizzard." He writes, "As a 20-plus year fan, it really hurts to see how things have developed in such an awful way, concluding that it just makes me sad. The tweet may be short, but the message behind it is entirely powerful." Optic COD's focus director, Davis Hitch Edwards, also writes, "The Activision stuff makes me sick. How freaking hard is it to not treat people like garbage? Be better." Mudahar in here, "Activision ain't going to do anything unless you all uninstall Warzone and start playing a game from their competitors. Delete that 250 gigabyte cancer and play something else. Also World of Warcraft as well, but everyone's already switching to Final Fantasy 14 anyway." You can see Katie Chu here saying, "Unfortunately for women, especially us black women, the lawsuit against Activision Blizzard isn't even remotely surprising. Welcome to our reality. I hope these women win their lawsuit." I hope they do too. You know, I think there's enough smoke here. Now, I guess the question becomes, you know, how much of this is Blizzard responsible for? You know, if you're going to allow people to drink on the job, you know, which we did at my last job, you know, that's a choice you make as an employer. If you're going to turn the other way and you're going to have people in upper management hooking up with subordinates, that's a choice you make. You know, when I was at that company, it was like the Wolf of Wall Street was like, I mean, it was a lighter version of that. We weren't like tossing little folks, but things would always be wild in the office. And we hired this young, of course, also good looking, but HR person. And she came in and like basically changed the whole culture of the company. A lot of people quit, but she was probably right looking back at it. The women there, I never really remember seeing any kind of like hands on the shoulder, weird stuff from guys. I protected my ladies. Like the call center was 99% men. And that was on the other side of the building. My team was about 80% women. And you know, I made sure that, you know, none of those, you know, nobody was creeping on them or anything like that. But still after work, you know, people go out and party, and who knows, there's stuff that probably happened that I didn't see. Plus I was so young at the time, I wouldn't even have known what I was looking at. I probably would have just been like, oh, they're just hooking up or whatever the case may be. It's possible. But this is some part personal responsibility and some part like Blizzard's, you know, you can't allow people to be doing this stuff at work. And this is just another just brutal, brutal PR disaster for Activision Blizzard. And yeah, maybe, you know, pick an Activision title you don't necessarily like anymore, and maybe it's time to delete it. A lot of this stuff is pretty shameful.
Chapter 3. Blizzard is collapsing. A new brutal report surfaces, highlighting Warcraft's failures.
It looks like Blizzard may be falling apart. Now, you might argue that they are too big to fail, and perhaps that's true, but I think that there's been a pretty clear line delineation in between when Blizzard was good, as we knew it, and when it is, well, what it is now. The whole "don't you have phones" era of Blizzard really happened after the large injection of corporate funds from Activision, a publicly traded company, who now demands more and more earnings and less costs from Blizzard. Now, earlier today, I covered what could only be described as a shocking set of revelations around the Blizzard workforce. And today, the very same day that news of that drops, I suppose the suit dropped late last night. Now, this first thing in the morning talks about Blizzard botched Warcraft 3 remake. This is via Jason Schreier when he's not writing about crunch that nobody cares about anymore, he can at times do some good work. And so credit where credit is due. This article is via Bloomberg. After internal fights, pressure over costs under former co-founder and CEO Blizzard Games had endless development timelines to get it right. But new Activision approach focuses purely on financials. I wonder why that is. Could it be that they're publicly traded? By the way, if you're watching this video and you aren't yet subscribed, I don't just cover video games. I cover movies, music, technology, YouTube news, basically everything except hard politics on this channel and 5 to 6 videos a day. So if you haven't yet, please do click that red subscribe button down below the video. It would definitely be greatly appreciated by me. I hope I earn that from you today. Blizzard Entertainment's disastrous remake of classic video game Warcraft 3 last year was a result of mismanaged and financial pressures, according to the newly revealed documents and people with knowledge of its failed launch. The release also reflected Blizzard's significant cultural change in recent years, as corporate owner Activision Blizzard has pushed developer to cut costs and prioritize its biggest titles. Warcraft 3 Reforged was long-awaited a reimagining of Blizzard's most popular game titles. Blizzard president J. Allen Brack called the original title monumentally important. When Reforged was announced in 2018, which was also a hilarious disaster, the company promised over 4 hours of updated in-game cutscenes, re-recorded voiceovers, but the project was never a priority for the company, in part because of a remaster of an old strategy game had little chance of becoming the type of billion-dollar production that Activision wanted. According to the people who asked not to be named because they weren't authorized to speak on company matters, with Blizzard pressured to focus on its biggest franchises, Warcraft 3 Reforged couldn't get the ambitious budget that the leaders wanted. Now, this is the problem with all modern day video games. It's not about making money. It's about making all of the money. And that's a very clear line, a very clear distinction. You have to make billions in modern day video games in AAA. So many great titles. That's why I've been drawn to so many indie titles lately, simply because gameplay matters. And what you're getting now out of Blizzard is just so far removed from the, you know, it feels soulless now. They rely so deeply on the shop to sell stuff now. It's why Final Fantasy is getting so many more interested people and why people are so eager to try out Amazon's New World. In the weeks after launch, Blizzard promised, when Warcraft 3 Reforged was released January 20th, 2020, it was widely panned, earning a 59 out of 100 on the review site Metacritic. The game was buggy, missing components that Blizzard had promised, including updated cutscenes, sequences that develop the storyline but aren't part of the gameplay. Re-recorded voiceovers. The remake even lacked features that the original Warcraft 3 had contained in 2002, such as a ladder system that ranked competitive players. Blizzard had also disabled the original version of the game on the digital platform, which, by the way, that was, you know, what added such a brutal level of insult to injury, is that you couldn't even play like the old game that had been patched and repatched and that was in pretty good shape. Blizzard, so the inferior remake was the only version the fans could play. In the weeks after launch, Blizzard promised to update the game and add some of those features over time, but 18 months later, they still never did it. They just abandoned you. They just abandoned all of their customers. You took that money and said, well, we're just going to focus on something else. Warcraft 3 Reforged not only felt like a disappointing remaster, but it was actually made the online experience of the original game worse for fans who've been playing it continuously for almost 20 years, with said Wes Fenlon, an editor for PC Gamer. 5 years ago, I think Blizzard was one of the few big game companies that could still cast itself as being your friend. But I think that innocent trust is now gone. There's nobody left. CD Projekt Red was probably the other company that you could have said the same thing about, but I don't trust them anymore, especially after that redonkulous Witcher mobile game, which I'm covering later today. Well, in a statement, an Activision Blizzard spokesperson said the company offered no question asked refund to Warcraft 3 Reforged owners. Blizzard prides itself on releasing games when they're ready, gameplay quality, blah, blah, blah. The central issue with Warcraft 3 Reforged was early, unclear vision, misaligned about whether the game was a remaster or a remake. This led to other challenges with the scope and the features of the game and communication on the team, with leadership and beyond, which all snowballed closer to launch. Developers across Blizzard pitched in to help, but ultimately bug fixing and other tasks related to the end of development couldn't correct the more fundamental issues. This is a shockingly common issue in the video game industry. Poor leadership, poor project management, poor vision. This is supposed to be something that comes with experience. Some people are born with this crazy amount of vision and project, and vision and drive. But most people, develop that. Iron sharpens iron. You surround yourself with other people. You learn from your mistakes. But it doesn't seem like anyone does that in the video game industry. Blizzard's success and her co-founder and former CEO, Mike Morhaime, was a product of its high standards for quality and willingness to delay games until they were ready. But Activision, which absorbed Blizzard in 2007, had left largely to operate independently, has been taking a bigger role in Blizzard's operations recently, putting financial pressures on the developer. Small teams, Warcraft 3 Reforged was Blizzard's first bad game, and another blemish for a company that had faced multiple internal challenges in recent years, including high-level departures like Morhaime and disputes over low wages. Blizzard also faced widespread criticism and calls for boycott after banning a player who supported Hong Kong's protest movement on a live stream. This week, California Department of Fair Employment and Housing sued Activision Blizzard over claims of harassment and discrimination, accusing the company of facilitating a toxic culture. Small teams like Classic Games, which worked on remakes including Reforged, were all but ignored in favor of potential billion-dollar games like Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2. Blizzard even canceled some of the other projects in favor of proven hits. 8 months after the release of Warcraft 3 Reforged, the Classic Games team was dismantled. Now, you have this situation where, you have a lot of fans, and you have this marketing machine that the video game industry has been. It's like a nonstop drip feed of hype that you have to force on your customers, because that's the only way you keep people talking. They keep talking about you, they keep talking, and then eventually they buy your crap. I mean, this was one of the biggest drawbacks for Cyberpunk 2077, because they'd essentially built up an impossible standard for many players that they were just never going to live up to. Of course, Blizzard chose to plow ahead with his premature release, giggity, of Warcraft 3 Reforged, largely because it had already taken pre-orders from players. According to people familiar with the decision, the company couldn't bump the game too much without potentially being forced to send out refunds and risking that fans wouldn't buy the game again. So, that's the risk you're supposed to take. David Fried, a designer of the original Warcraft 3 who was briefly brought back to work on Reforged, said in an email that there were things in the works for Warcraft 3 Reforged that would have absolutely revitalized the classic game. But behind the scenes, things weren't going well. Members of the team began worrying that they had promised more than they could deliver. Remastering Warcraft 3 was more complicated than their previous remake. StarCraft, thanks to three-dimensional models, the team was small, the production was disorganized, and the amount of work in front of them was daunting. It had taken months to revamp one of Warcraft 3's levels. Now they'd have to do the same for dozens more. Morale plummeted. Rob Bridenbecker, the head of Classic Game Team, was known for aggressive managerial style, for taking frequent trips out of the country during production and tendency to give unrealistic deadlines. Miscommunication became a serious issue across the team, as did arrangements over the scope and art style, according to people familiar with the matter. But, well, good thing they dressed up the female characters, though. The Amazon characters or whatever, so they didn't show too much skin. I mean, that's a good thing, right? We had developers who had dealt with exhaustion, anxiety, depression for more than a year now. The developers later said in a postmortem, many have lost trust in the team and company. Many players have also lost trust, and the launch certainly didn't help an already rough year for Blizzard's image. Warcraft 3 Reforged began losing features. Management threw out revised scripts, re-recordings the team had done. According to the people familiar with the process, choosing instead to stick with the original dialogue and voice acting. Why? To cut costs. I mean, that's all this was. This was just cost cutting. By the end of 2019, the Classic Games team had brought in help from all across Blizzard to finish Warcraft 3 Reforged, and it still wouldn't be enough. There's usually some sort of celebration, a lavish launch party full of drinks and speeches when Blizzard launches a new game. For Warcraft 3 Reforged, however, there was no champagne toasts, just wincing anticipation of how angry players would be when they saw how many features were missing from the game. It's the revelation here, the frustrating part here, is Blizzard freaking knew how bad the game was, and they still released it. The next Classic Games project, Diablo II Resurrected, due out in September, is being produced by other teams. The project was transferred to the Diablo 4 team in Albany, New York, which was absorbed into Blizzard earlier this year. People who have seen and played that game are actually optimistic about the chances. Well, yeah, but how many times can you burn your existing customer base and continue to come back and buy? Blizzard vowed to patch and update Warcraft 3 Reforge, but progress has been slow. In lieu of official support, a group of fans had to begin writing their own patches for the game, building a service called Warcraft 3 Champions that aims to add back missing features. This version of the game includes a competitive ladder. We have a level of freedom that Blizzard could never have, said John Graves, a member of the team who made the project his full-time job for the last year. How do they generate? They must have like a Patreon or something. This is sad. A year and a half after launch, Blizzard's Warcraft 3 Reforged remains incomplete, and the company is left facing questions, including whether it will ever be able to recover the brand damage done by the missed expectations. Blizzard has lost some community trust, says Elizabeth Harper, editorial director for the website Blizzard Watch. But they've earned quite a bit of trust over the years. It will take more than one bad game release to destroy it. Yeah, but it's not just one. It's the Hong Kong situation. It's the don't you have cell phones garbage. It's the bending the knee to China with changes in the games. It's the Warcraft issue. It's terrible patch and content releases for World of Warcraft retail. I mean, there's innumerable things over just the past 3 years that have continued to erode trust in this company. Eventually, there's got to be a breaking point, and I think we're starting to see it with the exodus to games like Final Fantasy.
Chapter 4. Kevin Smith lied about his He-Man Netflix adaptation, and we have the proof.
We basically now have confirmation, although it's been sort of pseudo-confirmed multiple times, that Kevin Smith is no fan of He-Man. In fact, he has admitted on audio tape, in video caught in 4K, that he's no fan of He-Man. He's also then gone on to lie and say that he was a big fan of He-Man and always was. This is very typical from the geek interloper personality. Look, I had a He-Man birthday cake. I think when I was like maybe 10, 8, I don't know. I had a twin sister, so it was half Barbie, half He-Man. I know it because I still have a picture of it from my parents. I didn't really care so much about like the reboot of it, but I'm also not making a He-Man television show, and I'm not trying to appeal to the old fandom while disparaging the legacy of He-Man. You know, I think that, you know, for months now, Kevin Smith has gone out of his way to, in particular with Clownfish TV, to talk about how, you know, oh, he's crazy, that he totally respects the original He-Man lore and that he's just a huge He-Man fan like all the rest of us. And then earlier this week, we had, again, another caught in 4K moment where Kevin Smith literally says that they meant to end a character that everyone loved to sit back and essentially laugh at people. Actually, I'm going to play the audio because it is so frustrating.
Watching the show last night, I turned...
Because in Orko, you know, how do you make Orko the most beloved character? And so we introduced this kind of broken, sadder, wiser version of Orko who still has this youthful voice and childlike enthusiasm for adventure. And like, he's got this moment where, like, even if you hated Orko your whole life, when he has that moment where he's talking about, like, please let me come along with you. I won't mess up this time. Like, he sounds like a 5-year-old who just wants to be involved in stuff. So
right there, that's great. Great stuff. I always love redemption arcs for characters in real life or in comics or cartoons. So that's cool. But then you'll see the real reason Kevin Smith did it.
we wanted to make the audience fall in love with Orko because we knew what we wanted to do with Orko at the end of episode four. Have him make, like, have him be the hero, have him make a very heroic sacrifice.
Yeah.
So it was kind of insidious where we were like, here's this character nobody likes. Let's make everybody love him and then watch them get angry when the character they've always hated is taken from them. They're like, but I like that guy now. Like, so that meant the world to me to hear you say that.
What a sicko. Like, think of what a sick prick. I mean, what? We wanted to bring up a character. We wanted to make you love this character just to take him away from you and watch you cry about it. That's Kevin Smith. And, you know, endlessly, places like Bleeding Cool are shilling for Kevin Smith and saying, here's like, you know, Masters of the Universe, Revelation, Kevin Smith's new troll smackdown. With less than 3 weeks to go until Mattel Television and Netflix unleashes Masters of the Universe Revelation, you might be not nor surprised to hear showrunner, executive producer, all around Masters of the Universe fan. Really? I thought he said he's got no love for He-Man. All around MOTU fan is still dealing with backlash from butthurt MOTU gatekeepers. This is a dude. I don't agree with people that it is a requirement for you to be a lifelong fan of a certain property to do a good job representing that property. I don't think it hurts. You know, watching Henry Cavill play Witcher, it kind of helps that he's read the books and that he's played the video game. But I don't think it's a requirement. Where I get frustrated is when you lie about it. When you say, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I've always been a long time Masters of the Universe fan, even though there's a half a dozen clips of me on the internet saying that I've never even heard of it or that I don't know, I've got no love for He-Man, I never watched He-Man, but now you're all of a sudden a great fan of him? Why? Because Netflix gave you a big check and because you, Kevin Smith, who hasn't made a relevant movie in 15 years, saw a paycheck there? Where were you when Stan Lee needed help, by the way? Not to pick at that one, but I remember begging you, dude. Now, maybe you did stuff behind the scenes. I don't know. That's probably a low blow by me. But, you know, he was so close to Stan Lee and he let, you know, all those people taking advantage of him. It was well documented. Kevin had to know what was going on. I know he reads tweets from people all the time. Maybe he did do something, though. You know, maybe that's just too low of a blow. Attacking the series, so they're attacking the series based on nothing more than rumors, innuendo, and some really bad reads on some interviews Smith did that they're claiming were lies. First, we've seen the first batch of episodes, so we can easily side with Smith in saying that he's been telling the truth in his interviews. But he hasn't been, because they were talking about, you know, emasculating He-Man and making Teela the hero, and in many of the reviews, where is this? In Grace Randolph... In Grace Randolph's Masters of the Universe review, she said that it was lacking a strong male character. If I remember correctly. Where was this? Maybe it was in her YouTube video. I can't remember if it was her tweet in her YouTube. Yeah, it was in her YouTube video. You know, a spoiler-free YouTube video. Now, you can have your problems with Grace. I definitely have in the past. But you see here, worth the drama, time jump, adult version of a kid's show, major queer baiting, no strong male characters. I mean, this is like, I mean, seriously? Sarah Michelle Gellar's remarks were also disappointing. She claimed that the original cartoon did not have strong female characters, which is a lie, and were not important to the story, which is proof she never watched it. Teela Ann was a captain of the Palace Guard, which meant that she outranked almost everybody. and answer to the king and queen. Sorceress was one of the most powerful magical universes users in the universe and guardian of Castle Grayskull, which is central to the story and the mythology of MOTU. Evil-Lyn is easily one of the most dangerous villains and gets much more character development than any of Skeletor's other warriors. I hate it when actors feel they need to disparage the original show in order to promote how amazing and revolutionary their reboot is. I mean, this is the thing. You know, anytime Hollywood has ever said that they've reimagined something or that they, you know, they've taken a different look, a different take on something, you can safely assume that they've took a steaming dump on the entire thing. And Kevin Smith knew, I think he knew the whole time, which is why he was so prone to respond to criticism on Twitter, is because he knew they were right about him. You actually see here, wrong. Smith is, you know, you can see as showrunner, I could have used these story suggestions before we locked in scripts. However, no. He-Man does no stepping aside for Teela, has no girlfriend in the show. The storyline is pretty dark, way metal. Before Revelation, we were calling it End of the Universe. Okay. Well, the reviewers are saying that there's no strong male characters in the show. I don't know. Like, the art style, I really like. I mean, I think everything looks pretty cool. The writing, though, I mean, look at Netflix Masters of the Universe Revelation radically reimagines He-Man's 1980s world. I mean, the story is much aligned with the streaming era. The first five episodes of Revelation's first season tell a continuous story, fit for watching over a single afternoon. The show is surprising as decades later IP revival, leaning on a childhood nostalgia to far less degree than the concept and visuals suggest. It's also pretty darn good. For those unfamiliar, Mattel's original 80s He-Man show follows... By the way, back then, shows were made just to sell toys. Of course. I had all of them. Practically every character in He-Man is a broad cutout with a toy-friendly name and colorful design. Every episode ends with a morality PSA, which should be in more often nowadays, to make it slightly more palatable to parents that the show was mostly designed to sell action figures. Revelation has a toy line too, but the major difference is that even though the new show is aimed at kids, Kevin Smith's sequel cares deeply about characters and puts them through the ringer. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts that adds a significant amount of retroactive meaning to the show's original show's flimsy dynamics. You can see, once a nostalgia is dispensed with, the show takes an unexpected turn and sidelines He-Man and Skeletor for most of part one. Yeah, who wants to see He-Man and He-Man's show? In fact, Revelation does the original series could not. Since the episodes often aired out of order, it significantly upends Eternia's status quo and places it in lasting danger. It also allows for a story focused not on He-Man and Skeletor, but the supporting characters, like He-Man's love interest, Teela, the interdimensional mage, Orko, and Skeletor's second-in-command, Evil-Lyn. Teela, the captain of the Royal Guard, is ostensibly the show's protagonist. I mean, that's exactly what people were saying, and now we know for sure. Kevin Smith is a liar. I will not be watching the show. I hope if you do, you enjoy it, because that's what life's about. But Kevin Smith should have at least been honest about this. It's really, really sad. I hope you enjoyed this video, though. And if you did, please remember to leave a like on it. We'll talk to you again real soon.